Now we're turning back to Deuteronomy in chapter 20, and this morning looking at battle orders. The Israelites being given battle instructions, and again, just to look at them and apply them to ourselves, for they are yet relevant as the Word of God ever is. So at the beginning from verse 1, when thou goest out to battle against thine enemies and seest horses and chariots and a people more than thou, be not afraid of them, for the Lord thy God is with thee, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. Don't be paralyzed by fear. Battles are inevitable. They were inevitable for Israel back then. They are inevitable for the Church of Christ today. They may take a different form. We're not using guns and missiles, but the battle is as real and it's as fierce. It's as constant, and we will continue to meet the enemy on a daily basis. We fight every single day. It wasn't if you go to battle. It was just when thou goest out to battle. And don't expect things to be in your favor. No, when you look humanly at what the enemy has and what it possesses, by way of manpower and firepower, you will be greatly outnumbered. You will be overwhelmed. If you forget something, you will be paralyzed with fear. Now here's the battle instruction to the Israelite. When you go out to fight and engage the enemy, and when you and I as a Christian look at what is against us, and there are times in life, aren't there, when you feel so fearful and afraid, you feel like giving up, you feel like it's not going to work out this time. You're conscious of a persecution and oppression, something that's bigger than you. Well, there's one thing to do, the very first thing to do, is not to be afraid, says God. Well, that's easier said than done. Well, not really. It's God that says it, and he says it for a reason. And this is what he says to include in your consideration of your situation and of the oppression, the persecution, the enemy. He says, remember, I'm with you. Not remember, I'm going to give you superior weapons. I'm going to give you allies that are vastly outnumbered them. No, you may be very much on your own in this. And that's one of the things that we most fail when we're most oppressed, when we're most distressed. We think we're on our own, and in a sense, humanly speaking, we are. Who can descend into your soul, into your heart, where the fear emanates and flows from? Well, nobody else, not even the closest to you. But you see, God can, and God does, and he says to Israel, when you go out to face the enemy in battle, the overwhelming numbers and firepower, don't be afraid. Why not? Well, because the Lord thy God is with thee. Now remember that, because look how the verse finishes. He gives them a reason. He says, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. almost on every great occasion. This is how God presented himself to his people. And when he wanted them to remember what he was capable of, he pointed them back to Egypt and to his deliverance of them from the place of bondage. And why he did that was because it's almost like the prototype deliverance and for help and for an evidence of his power and his greatness, his wisdom, his care, his provision, his protection. Absolutely everything was in that as he redeemed them out of Egypt. Now Christians have an even greater Egypt to look back to. They are pointed back because they're fighting literal battles. And they're going out again to fight another battle. And here's another overwhelming force, as the children were hearing in the Sunday school this morning, where God doesn't even keep them at their numbers. He brings them down to 300 to go out against an army of 135,000 to show them what he can do, to build up their trust and confidence in him for whatever battle they have to fight beyond that one. You know, it's a wonderful thing when you consider what God had to overcome with regards to the Egyptians, and just how he did it, and his protection, his provision, his care. It was just perfect. And when you think, Christian, of what he's done in redeeming you, consider what he had to overcome. There's no greater battle God has to fight for you. There's nothing he can't overcome. He's shown you the greatest battle that God had to fight for us was the battle of redeeming your soul and delivering you from the bondage to sin. Think of what he had to fight against, as it were. Not just the part, but Satan was nothing. Though he destroyed the works of the devil. In a sense, your sin was next to nothing other than what it causes him to do. What was the greatest enemy, as it were, that wasn't intended to be an enemy in the first place against you, that God had to deliver you from? Well, it was his own law. You were condemned. You were guilty. You were heading for damnation, and justly so. That's the dilemma, if we call it that, that God has to face when he's considering redemption. Your foes and hell and Satan and all that causes so much sorrow still, they're nothing in comparison to satisfying his own holiness, his own justice. He must become man. He must die in the sinner's place. He must endure agony and anguish. He must suffer as the God man. And he did it. And he did it willingly. He did it gladly. He did it lovingly. He did it because God so loved the world, because he loved you in Christ before the foundation of the world. So he would say to you, in all that you have to face, and the struggles are great, and we feel them, of course, but he says, look back. You're not in this on your own. Whatever it is that's causing fear and distress and anguish of your soul, I'm with you. Now, he wasn't like any of the other gods. That's what he's pointing out to them. He's saying, I'm the God of Israel. Israel, when you go to fight a battle, remember, it's me that's with you. It's not some of these idols that the people about you and your enemies have for their God. It's me, the one true living God that cares, that called you into being, that entered into a covenant with you. And I will preserve you. I will be with you. I will protect you. I will keep you. I will bring you through this. Never forget it. The battle orders, the first thing in any battle is to get the mind right. You'll win or lose in here before you pick up a sword or a spear. That's what God's saying to Israel. If you just grasp, remind yourself afresh who I am and what I've done, then you'll be comforted. When thou goest out to battle against thine enemies and seest horses and chariots and a people more than thou that even vastly outnumber you, be not afraid of them. As someone put it, when God says, for the Lord thy God is with thee, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt, one with God is a majority. That's all you need to hear. In any battle, in any situation, in any circumstance you'll ever face in your life, all you need to know and remember, but let it come into your mind, your heart, your soul. You only need to hear these words from God himself. I am with you. If nobody else is or can be, I'm with you. I'll bring you through. I'll keep you. I'll protect you. I'll see you overcome. Fear not, said Christ. I have overcome the world. Yes, Lord. And everything else, even your own law, you're fully satisfied. Verse 2, and it shall be when ye are come nigh unto the battle, notice that the priest shall approach and speak unto the people. Get yourself to preaching. Listen to the preaching. They're going to reaffirm, if they're preaching, if they're sent by God and commanded by him, called by him, they're going to preach his word. Now here's God saying, remember it yourself. This is to you as an individual. Whether, as it were, you hear this from any other source or not, you remember it. I'm with you. But then he says to his priests, as it were, now priest, when you go and the battle's about to begin, you must give the battle cry. Here's the, almost like the commanding officer, the chaplain first, perhaps, will liken him to the officers come after this and they have, and they are given the same message. Because it's the same message every time. It's basically, remember God's with us. Remember God will be with you. Remember God will fight for you. So verse 2, it shall be when you come nigh unto the battle that the priest shall approach and speak unto the people. He's going to encourage them. Yes, you need to be challenged in the church. You need to be exhorted. You need to be warned. But you need the encouragement. And here the priest, as the people are going out to battle, he's told what to tell the people, how to encourage them. You speak unto the people, verse 3, and say unto them, hear, O Israel, ye approach this day unto battle against your enemies. Let not your hearts faint. That is, be tender, be delicate, fear not, and do not tremble or make haste. That might refer to the heart itself, where it begins to race. And you're anxious, extremely anxious. Don't be. Neither be ye terrified because of them. Verse 4, for the Lord your God is he that goeth with you to fight for you against your enemies to save you. He doesn't go as an observer. He doesn't go as to stand on the side and be a cheerleader. He's going to actually into the battle and he's going to fight. He's not an armchair general. He's not sitting 50 miles back from the battlefield. He's in it. He's right beside you. He's with you. And he's going to fight for you. Do you know what's remarkable? Many of the battles, as you know, as Bible readers, and again so well brought out this morning in the Sunday school, they didn't have to fire a shot. What were the weapons that Gideon was told? And it was good to hear that and be reminded of what Gideon was told to get himself and his army. First of all, being reduced from 32,000 down to 300. Fighting an army of 135,000. But then his weapons. So what sort of super weapons are we going to be given, Lord? Well, here's a trumpet, a horn. Here's a pot, clay pot. And what about a torch? Well, perfect weapons for a warfare, aren't they? Just smash a pot, blow a trumpet, hold your torch up. You won't have to fire a shot. And they didn't. And God routed the enemy. 180,000 surround Israel. 180,000. Just a plague, an angel overnight, almost to a man, destroyed, just corpses the next morning. No battle. Numerous occasions, Egypt. No battle, but an almost oppressive, persecuting army destroyed. Under the waters. Wait upon the Lord. Stand still and see the salvation of our God. That's it. And of course, there is and there was the times of engagement and actual battle, but the Lord would be with them. Then verse 5 goes on. We're just looking at battle orders. So the Lord speaks. As it were, he says, as an individual, remember. Then he says to the priest, you preach, but you bring this message. And then the officers that are going to lead into the battle, look, verse 5. The officers shall speak unto the people, saying, what man is there that hath built a new house and hath not dedicated it? Let him go and return to his house, lest he die in the battle and another man dedicated. What are we going to do with these verses? How do you apply these? For these are the people that are being exempted from actually fighting in the battle. The first ones are those that have got a new house. Well, you don't expect that, do you? Well, let's just read verse 6 as well. And what man is he that hath planted a vineyard and hath not yet eaten of it? Now, it took 4 years before you could eat from your vineyard that you planted. For in Leviticus and under the law, when someone first planted a vineyard, they weren't to eat from it for the first 3 years. So this man hasn't got round to eating it. Maybe he's newly wed. He hasn't. He's just farmed. Hasn't yet reached the fourth year. Well, if it's his year and he can't eat of it now, God says, let him go home. He doesn't have to fight in a battle. The one that's just built a new house. Your land again may be newly wed, just got a new plot of land. He's built a house on it. Let him go home. Verse 7, of course, there's another who's exempted. That's the newly married or the one just engaged. I'm going to get married. Let him bring his wedding forward. Let him get married and let him stay home indeed for a whole year. Verse 7, what man is there that hath betrothed a wife and hath not yet taken her? He's not married yet. Let him go and return unto his house, lest he die in the battle and another man take her. Well, it shows the compassion of God. It's about what's going to be on a man's mind and a man's heart. Will he be ready for the battle? Will there be other things that are so pressing upon him that he'll not give himself wholly to the battle, to the fight? Will he then be a distraction to his fellow soldiers? So God exempts him. God cares. The application of this is God sees everything about our lives. There is a temporary exemption and stepping back from the battle, as it were. And this shows the care that God has for his people. We need to be reminded of this sometimes because rightly, we emphasize the service of God. And many people are very diligent and conscientious servants of the Lord, and they get quite upset. They get quite disturbed that they may have to take time out and they can't do what they would like to do for the Lord. But you see, the Lord cares about them. He understands this. Yes, it's right to stand back. Now, Matthew Henry takes this to be this exemption. And there's a nice application from this as well. That this wasn't for the time being. This wasn't for the going to battle the Amalekites and the Canaanites and so on. This was the long-standing practice for what he terms voluntary wars. That are wars that they would fight in the course of their being established in the land and other enemies would come against them. But when God actually specifically commanded a battle, as he does on this occasion, there wasn't exemption. They were to go and they were to fight. When God said, Israel, you fight, and I want you to fight this one, this one, this one, like in the taking of Canaan, they were all to fight. That tells us there are always battles we should be fighting, whatever our circumstances might be. There's no exemption from fighting the battle with sin. We have to be fighting that every day. Your circumstances indeed may make it all the more important that we're conscious in our vulnerability and our weakness, that the enemy will seize the opportunity to drag you down. So you have to stand up and fight. That's an ongoing battle. There's no release from that. There's no exemption. That's never ending. Keep fighting. Keep looking to the Lord. Keep crying out to Him. But in your service, in what you do for the Lord, will there be times you need to step back? You need a rest. And God understands that. And He didn't want people distracted, such as the ones He has exempted from the battle, the ones that were named. And of course, if you look, there is one group that is specifically targeted and mentioned as not to fight in the battle. And you get them, of course, in verse 8. And the officers shall speak further unto the people, and they shall say, What man is there that is fearful and faint-hearted? Let him go and return unto his house, lest his brethren's heart faint as well as his. So this isn't so much an exemption or an honorable exemption. Some people just never get round to fighting for the Lord. They just don't engage in the battle. They're fearful. Whatever the church is about, as it were, whatever works of evangelism, and look, we're not all made the same way, all doing the same thing, but we all have a role. We all have a gift. We all have a talent. But some are brilliant at finding reasons and excuses for just not using their talent or their gift. And when it boils down to it, perhaps it's fear. Plain, simply afraid. Afraid of men. The fear of man brings a snare. Afraid of failure. Or just absorbed with other things that are more important. If you're not a Christian, fear is going to destroy your soul. Because you see, it's fear that keeps so many back from committing their life to the Lord. The fear that He won't satisfy them. The fear that they'll have to stand up and face down a world that for the vast majority is opposed to Christ, opposed to His rule, the fear of being ridiculed or suffering the reproach of Christ. Do you know, in Revelation, and maybe I should take the time to show you this, but in one of the lists that are given there, top of the list, and this is a list of those who won't be found in heaven, who are never going to be there in the kingdom of the Lord, who will never see, never experience the joy and the blessings and this unique and amazing love of God, love of Christ. They'll miss all this. And there's a list given. What's top of the list? Who's top of the list? Murderers? The depraved? The slayers of children and worse? No, none of those things. Top of the list? The fearful. Let's turn to the verse, actually. I think it's Revelation 21. Are you afraid to follow the Lord? Are you afraid of what men will think or what men will say or how your street cred or reputation would nosedive if you become a follower of Christ? Revelation 21, verse 8, read from verse 7. He that overcometh shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son. But the fearful and unbelieving and the abominable and the murderers and the whoremongers and sorcerers and idolaters and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burneth with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. Top of the list, the fearful. And back here in Deuteronomy, God exempts those that are so afraid to fight from even being there. And why? Because he's considering those that are wholly committed to him and his cause. And he says, I don't want you to discourage them. It's those committed to me, that know me, that trust me. And listen, before we go any further, fear is not that you're not afraid of anything. That's not courage, brother. What is courage? And that's what the Lord requires. Courage. Trust in him. Faith in him. What is courage? Well, it's not that you're not afraid. It's that you're afraid, but you overcome your fear. It doesn't paralyze you. It doesn't prevent you. It doesn't stop you from doing what you know God wants you to do, because you trust him with all your fears and you still step out. And that's what the battle order is here. So, let's go quickly back to Deuteronomy chapter 20 then. Let's skip over a few things. Let's come to verses 10 to 18. When thou comest nigh unto a city, so here's the battle, here's the fightings in the future, what happens? When thou comest nigh unto a city to fight against it, then proclaim peace unto it. Oh, the mercy of God, the goodness of God. Mind you, as you read, this is only for cities that are at a distance, not the ones nearby. What's the application from this? Why? So let's read it just to show that that is the case. Verse 11, it shall be, if it make the answer of peace, when you said and said to them, we give you an opportunity now, surrender, no battle, you'll be spared. You'll become tributaries. Oh, there'll be taxes to pay. This is God blessing his people and judging them, but being merciful. They're not going to be wiped out. They're not going to be destroyed. If they respond to the peace envoy that's sent to them. So declare or speak peace. If, however, if they do open unto thee, then it shall be, verse 11, that all the people that's found therein shall be tributaries unto thee, and they shall serve thee. Verse 12, and if it will make no peace with thee, but will make war against thee, then thou shalt besiege it. And when the Lord thy God hath delivered it into thy hands, must be nice to go out fighting a battle, not with if in your mind, but when. You know, we're going out to fight. Oh yes, maybe it's an even battle. Well, it can still go one of two ways. But Israel isn't told that. They're told if they're walking with God, if they're being obedient to him, it's not if they will win the battle, it's just when. When? Verse 13, the Lord thy God hath delivered it into thine hands, then thou shalt smite every male thereof with the edge of the sword, and take to yourself the women and the cattle and all those things as God's provisions for you. They've refused God's offer of peace and mercy, as indeed many in the gospel do. It's peace. It's good news from heaven. Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill to all men. If they receive it, if they respond to it, not if they reject it. And again, we'll see, only to nations afar off. So look, verse 13, and when the Lord thy God hath delivered it, then you smite them. Verse 14, but the women and the little ones and the cattle and all that's in the city, even all the spoil thereof, shalt thou take unto thyself. And thou shalt eat the spoil of thine enemies, which the Lord thy God hath given thee. Thus shalt thou do unto all the cities. It's a judgment upon them, which are, look, verse 15, very far off from thee, which are not of the cities of these nations. And he's referring to the ones that are about them at that moment in time, the Amalekites and so on. No, you don't declare peace to them. Their time has run out. Judgment is coming to them. No peace offer. No, you go in and as the sword of my justice and judgment, you execute them. Now again, this is applied for the Church of Christ in these ways. Be extremely careful of those closest to you. Indeed, there are certain ones, certain things rather, in this day of grace that you cannot permit to live or let live. There are those, if we refer these to the distant cities and nations, where when they came upon them, they were to offer peace to them. We may say there are certain things for the Christian that we can, to some extent, entertain. So what do I mean, or what is meant? Well, you can have your little bit of sport. You don't have to totally destroy, say, some sport, some arts, some music, depending on the music, of course, and what you listen to. You have to be discerning. But you know, some get, when they're first converted particularly, extremely legalistic. And they permit nothing at any time. But they always must be servants. Never allowed to become masters. A little hobby, a little interest. If it's kept as a servant, if it's used and employed on occasion, there's nothing wrong with that. If it becomes a master, if that little bit of exercising becomes something, like some of the folk here have heard me mention maybe a number of occasions, a particular friend, he just took up a little bit of jogging just to get himself back in shape. And of course it's free. He didn't have to pay anything, just to jog around the neighborhood. But after a while, he could not sit at night. He couldn't stay in the house until he had run. And he was building up the miles. He had to run and run and run. You could see him miss prayer meetings, midweek meeting, but he wouldn't miss his run for anything. It became a master. Something as silly and simple as going for a jog. Could you say there was anything wrong with it in itself? No. If he'd done it now and again. But it became his master. Little bit of music. Some like their music. But then they get dragged into it. And then it's not just this type of music. A little bit of relaxing classical music. No, it's down into this music. And the lyrics and the darker and the negative and the anarchic. What do you make peace with? You have to be careful. Sport for some is an idol, absolute. They know more about sport than they do about their Bible. Well, these are things that can be kept at a distance. Remember, the apostle put it like this, didn't he? He says all things. Of course, he means all legitimate things. All things are lawful for me, but all things are not expedient. So even in those things, you have to be extremely careful. But then there are some things that you just don't entertain at all. It's just not an option. You've got to sever. You've got to cut with them. You've got to stop them altogether. Some worldly friendships are legitimate. After all, if you want to do someone good and they're not a Christian, you need to get close to them. You may work with them. You may even meet some on occasion outside of the workplace. But listen, if those same people are very antagonistic in the things of God, or begin to entice you away from God, and are a bad influence, you got to sever that straight away. You can't entertain that for a second. And why is it that God said, with regards to the Amalekites and so on, that are immediately beside you now, Israel, you just wipe them out? Well, he tells us why. He said, because they're going to influence you. They're going to introduce their gods to you. You're going to see something captivating, something intriguing in their style of worship and what they do. It's going to appeal to the baser part of your heart, and you're going to be dragged down, and soon you'll be worshiping their gods, and you'll bring my judgment upon you. And that's what they did again and again and again. Now look, we've got to be careful in these. This is why these things are written. They're written for our learning. So says the Lord, when you go far away, declare peace. You can retreat from them. You'll be way back home. They'll be your tributary and contributing something to you when they've surrendered. But those that are immediately contiguous to Israel, you don't spare them. No, no, too close. And some of us perhaps are too close, or have let the wrong influences get too close to us, and we're going the wrong direction. We're close to home. You haven't perhaps long to go. Don't be a Lot's wife. Don't fall at the last step. There's just a little while to go and soon this will all be gone. Don't sell your soul for a few more years indulgence, listening to the wrong influences. Stand up for the Lord and know his blessing. Then I'll close. The time has gone. Maybe I keep these and I briefly mention them. Next Lord's Day, the last two verses, when thou shalt besiege a city a long time, not to cut down the fruit trees. Well, there's a wonderful little application picture in that, and as to why that might be, the obvious, of course, you're going to feed, you're going to eat from them, but there's something a little deeper than that, as we would expect from the applications I trust I've made, that they're some way helpful to you. Let's sing our closing hymn. This part of our service, we're together at the Lord's table. It's the hymn 465.